This hour by Frederick Remington, fully cooked, ready-to-eat bacon. Exclusive, no refrigeration, 10-year extended shelf life bacon. The thickest media center-cut bacon in the industry at fullycookedbacon.com. Tina's.
You better stop. Hey, what's that sound?
Why are you criticizing Jim Comey and Andrew McCabe? If a friend asked you that question, it wouldn't be hard to answer. Comey was the shiftiest, most political FBI director in memory. His deputy, Andy McCabe, repeatedly lied to federal investigators. You try that, you'd wind up in jail. So why criticize these guys? Because they deserve it. But let's say a federal prosecutor asked you the very same question using this language, quote, what is the reason for your continued criticism of Mr. Comey and his former deputy, Andrew G. McCabe? See how the tone is different there? Suddenly, it's ominous. It sounds more like a threat than a question. What's the point of asking that, you might wonder? Since when is criticizing FBI officials a crime in this country? Well, apparently, since Robert Mueller became special counsel. According to the New York Times, that's one of more than 40 questions Mueller plans to ask the president under penalty of perjury. Here's another one. Quote, what was your opinion of Mr. Comey during the transition? Huh? Your opinion? Whose business is that? Aren't Americans allowed to have any opinion they want without being grilled by law enforcement about it? And then there's this question, quote, what was the purpose of your July 2017 criticism of Mr. Sessions? Again, criticism of a government official framed as a crime, as if dissenting views aren't allowed or must be justified to a prosecutor. What country is this anyway? In fact, the president is allowed to have any opinion he wants of anyone who works for him. That is true of all presidents. They get to hire and fire their own appointees for their own reasons. If you don't like it, don't vote for them. This is a democracy. Trump got elected. Mueller didn't. Presidents also get to formulate their own policies. Voters can decide whether they agree with those policies. Again, that's why we have elections. Yet here are two more Mueller questions. Listen to these. Quote, what discussions did you have during the campaign regarding Russian sanctions? And, quote, what involvement did you have concerning 2016 Republican platform changes regarding arming Ukraine? So let's review. Trump ran for office promising to improve our relationship with Russia. He said that frequently and in public. Voters heard it, they agreed with him, and he won. But permanent Washington hated the idea of getting closer to Russia. They've been pushing a war with Iran for years. That's obvious now. Closer ties with Russia would make an Iran war far more complicated. Putin had to be the archvillain, the most evil man in the world. Never mind China or Mexico or other countries whose behavior is actually hurting the United States. Russia needed to be our enemy, a country with an economy the size of Texas that can't make a working escalator. They needed to be evil, no matter what voters said they wanted. And so that happened. The policies that Trump ran on are now considered evidence of a crime. America is that much closer to war with Iran. Mission accomplished.
Insight here, but think about this whole situation. It wasn't that long ago, you remember, during the presidential campaign of 2012, when Mitt Romney had said that Russia was our biggest threat, then what was President Obama's comment? Kind of laughingly, right? How ridiculous. And, of course, everything that the Obama administration had done to placate Russia, not to mention what the Secretary of State did with Uranium One. I mean, is this a convoluted mess or something? I mean, it was like you were for Russia until you decided you were against Russia. And, oh, yeah, it's convenient now because of Donald Trump. It's like Donald Trump is the scapegoat for everything. When Donald Trump is the one who is trying to get this all back on track and to sort this out, when it is in one big, humongous web of lie after another by this resistance and by this ongoing class of, of our government that has been running in the shadows and has been pulling, all the strings. And don't you think for a minute that their influence is so contrived, number one, and so powerful that they're not making congressmen, senators on both sides of the aisle jump and, kowtow to to their demands. That's what's happening here. And, we've got too many unelected officials that are part of the swamp that are controlling too much of our government. That's what this all comes down to, ladies and gentlemen.
I tried other brands. but I came back to my sunshine.
For the best hot or cold pain relief, get the best. Get a Sunny Bay heating pad.
Sometimes life can be a pain in the neck or back or shoulder.
And the best relief for that pain is a Sunny Bay heating pad. Did you know that the American College of Physicians said that one of the best ways to treat muscle pain is heat therapy? Sunny Bay heating pads are handmade with high quality, can be used at home or at work, and have a lifetime 100% positive rating on both Amazon and Etsy.
Why take another pill?
Many people use our Sunny Bay heating pads alone and got rid of the neck pain.
Long distance travel or long hours in front of a computer can take its toll on your body.
See why our homegrown small business at sunny-bay.com has tried to help people just like you. Get your Sunny Bay heating pads at sunny-bay.com. That's sunny-bay.com or call 253-678-1361 for hot and cold therapy. sunny-bay.com.
It's Bill Martinez live.
The top of the hour, Bill Martinez here, and a guest that has been on with us before. And I love having Ramesh here with us because I get to say Arunachalam. And it just sounds like a lovely greeting, Ramesh. I mean, there's got to be some significant meaning to Arunachalam.
It's a greeting. It's a greeting. It's like saying welcome. Right.
Well, I just want to share that with you because you're always welcome here, Ramesh, on Bill Martinez Live. And congratulations on the new book, 9/11, The Unanswered Questions. Well, the terrorist attack, as you write, the terrorist attack of September 11, 2001 was this generation's version of Pearl Harbor. Now, even 17 years later, the war against terror continues and all facets of American life has changed, just as with Pearl Harbor. So many similarities here, right?
Right. Absolutely. Absolutely. It was a transforming event, Bill, and just as Pearl Harbor was. And I think there's no question about it. Things have changed. You look at pre-9/11 and post-9/11 days, and I think things have changed very much. So can I go ahead with my story?
No, go ahead, because my questions will come up as we go along, because just real quick, just as you mentioned Pearl Harbor, you know, the questions remain about the terror attack. Interestingly enough, I mean, you look back Pearl Harbor decades ago, questions still remain, and here we are. I mean, it seems that 9/11, only 17 years down the road, and here we are in the information age that we're in, but there seems to be some consistency of accountability, lack thereof, I should say, and transparency on both these cases, right?
Absolutely, absolutely, Bill. You hit the nail on the dot. Okay. Let me take off from that. See, if you look at 9/11, one of the most important things that went wrong that day was communication between the Federal Aviation Administration and the North American Aerospace Defense Command, NORAD. Right? So communication failed. If communication had been proper, you wouldn't have seen planes being converted into weapons of mass destruction, right?
Right.
So the Air Force would have been on top, either escorted the planes or done something else. It wouldn't have happened. So I think as the 9/11, so looking at the crime of 9/11, the 9/11 Commission had a duty to look at why the communication system failed. And that's where I think they failed very badly.
Mm-hmm.
If you look at there is something called the National Airspace System, which is the information system of all information systems that come under the purview of the Federal Aviation Administration.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the word, you'll be very surprised, Bill, the word National Airspace System occurs just once in the 9/11 Commission report. It's very strange.
That is
very
strange.
Very strange.
Why do you think?
And if yes, I'll go ahead.
Okay, all right. Go ahead first, and then okay. Go ahead. That's fair.
See, what happened was, I think it was important for the 9/11 Commission to ask the question. People were not aware, but the National Airspace System was being designed prior to 9/11. Okay, that's a fact that none of the people who testified mentioned. None of the people from the Federal Aviation Administration, none of the people ever mentioned it. In fact, there was something which I stumbled upon. I came across what was called the National Airspace System Information Architecture Committee. This committee, it was called the NIAC. NIAC was designing the NAS, putting it in place. NIAC had stakeholders. It had defense contractors. It had private contractors. It had individuals who all had security clearances. We don't know who gave them, who created the NIAC, and all. And there is public domain information that there were contracts given from the Federal Aviation Administration to all these different companies to design the NAS pre-9/11. So the key question here is, what were these stakeholders doing on 9/11? Did they have access to the NAS? What were their security clearances? What were they doing? None of this has been explored, though a vast amount of material exists. And if you've seen my book, I've quoted references extensively, right, showing you the presence of this information.
Exactly.
And I think it's very, very crucial to understand who designed the NAS that failed miserably on 9/11, who implemented it, and what were they doing on 9/11, and most importantly, did they have access to the NAS on 9/11? And I think these were the key questions.
Yes.
And I think...
let me ask you, relative to that, how long, you may have stated this and I may have missed it, how long had the NASC been in operation up, before 9/11?
The NAS was always in operation because, NAS works in different forms.
Mm-hmm.
So as technology improves, you redesign the NAS, right?
Right.
And the biggest concern in 1998, I'll take you to a conference, and I've mentioned the conference in the book.
Mm-hmm.
April 22nd, 1998, a conference was held on interoperability. What does interoperability mean? It means what I'm saying, you understand. What you're saying, I'm understand. Basically, what it means is there are different information systems in the NAS. All of them need to talk seamlessly, especially in times of disaster, especially in times of hijacking and other such situations.
Mm-hmm.
So this whole conference was to design the NAS so that and put in place appropriate software so that it's interoperable, so that seamless flow of information occurs from point A to point B. For example, from the Federal Aviation Administration's headquarters to the Naran Command Center, which did. Now, if a lot of the taxpayer money was going into all of this, and if this was being designed, and this failed miserably, again, coming back to the same question, not like a broken record, but to emphasize the fact that 9/11 Commission ought to have looked at it, but they didn't, because of serious conflicts of interest.
Now, where were the conflict of interest?
Okay, let me give you a couple of clear examples, Bill. Is that okay?
Yeah, please.
Let me start with, I think you'd have heard of the name Jane Garvey.
Mm-hmm.
Jane Garvey was the Federal Aviation Administrator from 1997 to 2002. When she testified before the 9/11 Commission, she did not mention the fact that the NAS was being designed before, redesigned before 9/11. She didn't identify the stakeholders who were involved, and she didn't mention it. And I'm coming to the main point as to why she perhaps may not have done it, is one of the key stakeholders involved in the design of the NAS is a corporation called Mitre Corporation, M-I-T-R-E. Mitre is big time. It's located in Virginia. It's a big defense contractor. It's big time. It's got the revolving door. People from the government come to Mitre. People from Mitre go to the government, to the Department of Defense.
Mm-hmm.
So it's got the revolving door. And Mitre and its associate company, PTEC, and many others work on specific contracts with the Federal Aviation Administration.
Ramesh? Well, I'm sorry, Ramesh, I got to interrupt you here real quick. We've got to go to break real fast. We'll be right back. Ramesh Arunachalam is with us as we continue to take a look at the unanswered questions here on Bill Martinez Live.
It's a no-brainer. A Big Berkey water filter is the one you need, period. You need a water filter that removes chlorine, fluoride, pharmaceuticals, BPA, and other endocrine disruptors, pesticides, bacteria, viruses, and much more, right? And does it all at only 2 cents per gallon. Get the original, most trusted name in gravity water filtration, Big Berkey. And now GCN listeners receive 5% off ceramic filter systems using code GCN. Call or click 1-877-99-BERKEY or BigBerkeyWaterFilters.com. That's 1-877-99-BERKEY.
It's about time something new came along for better selling and buying online. And I found it.
What now, Marge?
It's buysellmakeoffer.com.
Never heard of it.
It's a brand new company. That's why you've never heard of it. It's the newest and best way to sell any products online. I did all the research.
Sell my car?
Yes.
Our home?
Yep.
My golf bag?
Your golf clubs. All of them.
How about your purse collection hoard?
Hey, now.
You said any product.
Right. I did. We get 30 days free.
Really?
Packages starting from only $9.95. And buysellmakeoffer.com will never charge item fees, ever. Never. And this is cool. Listen to this. You can even use Skype or video to show your items.
That's cool.
Yes. All we have to do is go to the website, sign up, and then load our stuff to sell. I love this site.
Buysellmakeoffer.com.
Buysellmakeoffer.com. You got it?
Buysellmakeoffer.com.
Buysellmakeoffer.com. Better selling, better buying.
Frustrated trying to get business capital? Want to take the slow process and rejection out of the equation? GCNLoans.com removes the slow, irritating approval process. Instead, get quick, simple funding. Powered by David Allen Capital, 80% of our pre-qualified clients are approved in days. Pre-qualify at GCNLoans.com and get your money this week. It's that easy. GCNLoans.com. That's GCNLoans.com.
Healthcare reform is confusing, but whether it's finding an affordable insurance plan, keeping your doctor, or being able to afford needed prescriptions, navigating the healthcare system has become a challenge. Control your own healthcare costs and choices with Liberty HealthShare. Liberty HealthShare is not insurance. It is an association of self-pay patients who unite with like-minded people to share the cost of each other's medical needs. Neighbor helping neighbor. Learn more now by going to libertyoncall.org. That's libertyoncall.org.
Hello, I'm Mike Lindell, the inventor of My Pillow, and like all of you out there, I had problems sleeping. Pillows would go flat, I would flip-flop all night long, I would wake up with a sore neck, maybe a headache, or feel like I needed a nap even though I slept 8 hours. When I invented My Pillow, I wanted it to where you could move the patented fill to give you the exact support you need as an individual, regardless of sleep position. My Pillow will get you into that deep REM sleep faster, and you will stay there longer. It's not about how much time we spend in bed, it's about how much of that quality sleep we get. I do all of my own manufacturing right here in the United States. I have a 10-year warranty. You can wash and dry my pillow, and I give you a 60-day money-back guarantee, so you have nothing to lose. And here's my best offer ever. You can buy one of my pillows and get one absolutely free.
Go to MyPillow.com or call 800-870-0305 and use promo code GCN. That's MyPillow.com or 800-870-0305 with promo code GCN.
Anytime, any place, anywhere, radio remains the most intimate of all forms of media. At home, at work, in the car, on smartphones. Over 90% of consumers still listen to radio every week. That makes choosing radio as a place to advertise your business one of the best decisions you can make. Email advertise@gcnlive.com and partner up with an experienced GCN representative. Advertise@gcnlive.com. Easy, affordable, effective.
Program, your calls, your opinions. Bill Martinez live.
Welcome back. 19 minutes after the top of the hour. Bill Martinez here. We're looking at 9/11, the unanswered questions, the latest book from Ramesh Arunachalam, and he's giving an explanation. Ramesh, let's go ahead and pick it up where you left off before. I'm sorry to interrupt you. We had to go to break.
No problem. So I was saying Mitre Corporation, PTEC, and others were involved in the design of the NAS. And the names were not brought up because there were future 9/11 commissioners who had a relationship with the board members of Mitre. And the example that I gave you is a clear example. Jane Garvey, who was the administrator of the Federal Aviation Administration, 97 to 2002, testified twice before the 9/11 commission in 2003 and 2004. I think the correct dates are given in my book.
Mm-hmm.
And somewhere in 2004, she joins the board of Mitre Corporation. If that's not conflict of interest, tell me what is.
Exactly. So, wow, this is amazing. So here it is. We've got a blatant conflict of interest. This is just, you know, one aspect of this of these unanswered questions here, Ramesh. So what else can you tell us?
Right. Okay, this is one. Now you look at the most important people on the ground at the World Trade Center. Ground zero. They were the firefighters. Now, the New York City Department firefighters, FDNY firefighters, have provided, 503 of them had given testimonies, okay? Testimonies of what happened that day, and these testimonies were available. But the 9/11 Commission chose to use them in a very convenient manner. It chose to use them talking about heroism, honor, and the manner in which they excelled, all of that, which is very good. Firefighters did yeoman service. They were brilliant. They were rescuing people. But very importantly, if you go through the testimonies of firefighters, they were talking of explosions and secondary explosions.
Mm-hmm.
I think, and 118 of them spoke of that. Now, about 90 of them spoke directly of explosions and secondary explosions. And I think it was the duty of the 9/11 Commission to have called in at least a small sample of the firefighters to find out what the firefighters were talking about in terms of explosions and secondary explosions, especially from both the towers, North and South Towers, and also WTC-7, which incidentally was not investigated, which was not even touched upon by the 9/11 Commission in its report. Right?
Right.
So I think looking at the firefighter testimonies was a very important aspect. This was obtained by the New York Times through the Freedom of Information Act legislation, and it's available. And the book has many excerpts from these testimonies, and you'll see them when you
exactly.
read them.
Yes, they're all right here. Well, the thing is amazing. I mean, when you're talking, you know, that high incidence of firefighters saying they've heard explosions or secondary explosions, how do you omit that from the report? If that's, that's just not incompetence. That's purposeful, I would think.
Yes. That is, that's why I said, if you see the blurb of the book, it says certain lines of inquiry were omitted, whether by design or by incompetence, I don't know. But then, as you rightly say, it can't be incompetence. It has to be by design.
Right? Yeah, because Ramesh, I mean, this is the thing that's so aggravating about what they, and I say they, and that is the class of people that want to determine what narrative they want to put on us instead of giving us an objective perspective. I mean, this is the significance of history. It is so important that we get the history right. If it's rewritten, if it's altered to deviate from the truth, then we pay a big price down the road. And here we are. Part of the confusion that we're dealing with even to this day is resulting from something that happened 17 years ago. And that this commission, which, oh, yes, they accepted the people's money, they end up giving us, a very weak report. When you have these kind of questions, I think, that are so significant that remain unanswered. I think that's a shame on this commission.
Yes, absolutely. I agree with you, Bill. Going on, can I add a couple of more issues?
Yes, please. Please.
Yes. See, if you look at the... Now, you look at the... in a crime, what do? You preserve the crime scene. Right?
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. You preserve the...
The first thing. Yes.
The first thing. The debris was shipped out to India and China. Nobody, you didn't have samples. Why do you test for stress and force on computer models? If you had the debris samples, you would have got a better answer. Even to this day, the 9/11 Commission report doesn't fix accountability for why this happened and how the crime scene was not preserved. And that's a crime by itself.
Yes.
Tampering with evidence is a crime. And the report is silent on it.
That's amazing that it is silent and it remains silent. See, Ramesh, this is where the mainstream media does a disservice for us, because they need to really stay on top of this instead of, you know, trying to chase down some, you know, some prostitute or alleged violation that supposedly the president has made. I mean, we are wasting time and resources on things that don't matter when here we've got questions like this that still aren't answered.
Right. In fact, instead of having, when you can have a criminal investigation into the president with regard to interference of Russia and other things, I think you can jolly well have a criminal investigation into what went on in 9/11.
Exactly.
That's fully with you.
What other questions that you have in your book?
I'll tell you. See, look, now all the three buildings, WTC South Tower, North Tower, and WTC-7, they all fell on the same day, they were located at the same place, and they had been leased to the same person. So, as a person of interest, you would talk to him,
mm-hmm.
right? The 9/11 Commission did not talk to Larry Silverstein.
Right, exactly.
To the best of my knowledge, he did. Only two places in the report mention Silverstein properties. But here's a guy. Look at the logic, Bill. If you're an investigator, you're looking at a crime. Here is a person who put in $14 million of his own money, got his friends to contribute something like between $500 to $600 million, mm-hmm. and then had a pre-signing insurance risk report, which estimates the risk of a plane hitting the towers. Has them insured, and he insures them as two events, gets them to be looked at as two events.
Yes.
Pitches for an insurance payout of $7 billion and gets a payout of $4.55 billion. Don't tell me the commission didn't find it strange enough to talk to this guy, at least find out what was going on.
And they never talked to him?
I have, to the best of my knowledge, they didn't. There's no testimony on the oath.
Yes.
If you look at the 9/11 website, there's no testimony from Larry Silverstein.
Mm-hmm.
I think he's one of the key persons of interest, as were all the designers of the NAS.
Yeah,
there were about 20 people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, when you follow the money and you look at what he had to gain, because keep in mind those towers were already, he was already in trouble with those towers because he had to ameliorate all the... air intake system. They were loaded with asbestos. We're talking billions of dollars to clear that out, right? And then, as you say, this insurance policy that he took out and specifically had it rewritten to include being attacked by an airplane was done months before 9/11. I believe it was in first quarter of 2001.
So what in July? July.
Yeah. But so what did he know? Well, what did he know to give him that kind of heads up? And then you're saying July. I thought I read at some point it was in the first quarter, but probably, you know, obviously you're right. So in July, and that makes it even worse yet. So 2 months ahead of 9/11, he's covered.
He's covered. Exactly. So what premonition did he have and how did he have it? I think the commission had a right to find out and let us know, you know, what was his thought process. So that's a big...
Exactly. Ramesh, let me tell you, we're out of time, but you got to come back because we've got so many more questions to address here, and I know our audience is going to be eager to hear more, but I would say the quickest way is to get your hands on his new book, right? 9/11, The Unanswered Questions, available at all the usual places, will be linked on our website. Ramesh Arunachalam on Bill Martinez Live. Ramesh, thank you so much.
Life insurance is one of those things that just about everybody needs, but few people actually have. Hey, if you die unexpectedly without life insurance, guess what? You'll leave your family with even a bigger mess. Life insurance will help replace your family's income. It'll help cover burial expenses. Life insurance can even help pay off debt like credit cards and medical bills. Life insurance can even pay for college. And if you own a business and you die, life insurance can help your business from collapsing. It can even help cover estate taxes. Life insurance has never been more affordable and needed. Plus, you can always shop around even if you have a plan and save some money. So call the Life Insurance Quote Line right now for free pricing information.
800-915-9164. 800-915-9164. 800-915-9164. That's 800-915-9164.
Non-attorney paid spokesperson. Could your house go into foreclosure? Are you behind on your mortgage payments? Does it seem like the bank has no interest in helping you save your home? And you feel like you have nowhere to turn for help? Then we have good news for you. Foreclosure Protection Services can help save your home as they specialize in foreclosure assistance. That's all they do. If you're behind on your mortgage payments, being threatened with foreclosure, have been denied a loan modification, or been the victim of a predatory loan, it's critical that you call Foreclosure Protection Services now at 800-667-9035. Their network of attorneys and their agents are available to speak to you now. If you're behind on your mortgage payments, Foreclosure Protection Services can help stop the foreclosure process. Call today before it's too late. New laws are in effect that may save your home. Call Foreclosure Protection Services now at 800-667-9035. 800-667-9035. That's 800-667-9035.
Attention business owners and independent contractors. This is a money-saving message from Tax Mediation Services. If your business owes $20,000 or more in taxes, we can help you today, right now. Listen, dealing with the IRS is no picnic. It's an intimidating and extremely stressful process, and you don't want to go it alone. Our attorneys know every law, every tax break, and every possible opportunity to help you resolve and reduce your tax debt. And if you owe more than $20,000, you may be at the top of their hit list. So don't take your tax debt lightly, because it will not go away on its own. The IRS can seize your bank accounts, your home, and even shut down your business. Call our tax experts today at 1-800-261-9818 and let us deal with the IRS while you focus on your business. That's 1-800-261-9818. Again, 800-261-9818.
Bill Martinez.
With you, America. Bill Martinez here. For more information on the show, you can go to BillMartinezLive.com. The topic right now is American families facing a growing rent burden. High housing costs threaten financial security. A new report by the Pew Charitable Trust shows that in the aftermath of the 2007-09 Great Recession, more households are rent burdened. You're starting to hear this word more and more often, and we're going to break it down for you because we're going to hear more about it. When we talk about somebody being rent burdened, that is spending more than 30% of their pre-tax income on housing than before the downturn. Such families are slower to transition to home ownership and are more financially fragile than those that spend less of their income on rent or own their homes. That is the situation, and here to break it down for us is Aaron Currier. Am I saying the last name correct, Aaron? Forgive me.
Yes, Currier, that was perfect.
Currier, Director of Pew's Family Financial Security and Mobility Project. Aaron, thank you so much for coming on and breaking this down for us. As I said to the audience, we're hearing the term rent burden, and this is a growing concern, is it not?
It is. This report that we just released explores the 43 million U.S. households that rent their homes. That's a figure that has been growing pretty substantially in recent years, and as it has grown, the proportion of renters who struggle with rent has also grown. So our research was really looking at who is rent burdened and what are the implications of being rent burdened on other areas of a household's balance sheet.
And this growth of rent burdensome has grown exponentially here recently. And even though we have an increase in GDP in this country, jobs are on the increase, this may take a bit to reverse, will it not?
Definitely. You know, what we can see from the research from a macroeconomic standpoint is that from 2001 to 2015, the demand for rental property grew dramatically. Way more people entered the rental market. In fact, it was an increase of 9.3 million renter households just since 2004. And because there is so much higher demand, then the prices are also going up. So prices are driven up to historic highs. And it's creating a little bit of a pinch. Even though rents are going up, median income has remained essentially flat. Mm-hmm. So people have the same amount of money, but higher expenses, especially for housing.
And they're not homeowners, they're home renters now.
That's absolutely right. And so they don't necessarily have control over what their rent is being charged. Plus, other research that we have done previously that looks at household expenditures more broadly shows that households are seeing increases in spending for lots of different things, other core needs such as transportation, healthcare, food in some instances. So it's not just the cost of rent that's going up, but the cost of lots of different things that families really need on a week-to-week and month-to-month basis without a commensurate income increase.
What is Pew seeing as a potential solution here, or are you just, you know, these are the facts and we've got trouble here in River City?
Well, our goal of our project is really to build a fact base on family balance sheets. We want to inform policy and believe that there are really important lessons here for policymakers at the state and federal level, particularly those lawmakers that are thinking about how the high cost of rent is affecting their constituents. This research makes clear that, first of all, it is a problem and it's a growing problem, but also that rent-burdened families are financially precarious in other areas of their lives. They're not able to save money. They're not as likely to transition to homeownership. And so they're just much more vulnerable to income shocks and financial emergencies than they were previously. And that can have broader implications for the economy, too, at both a local and a national level.
Yeah, I was going to say the vulnerability of this group is immense, is it not?
It absolutely is. You know, our research is showing that nearly two-thirds of rent-burdened households have less than $400 cash held in a bank account, and the typical rent-burdened household has less than $10 in savings. If you compare that to the typical homeowner, they have about $7,000 in savings.
Mm-hmm.
And as you mentioned, households that are rent-burdened for at least a year are slower to transition to homeownership than they used to be, and they're less likely to transition to homeownership than someone who's never been rent-burdened.
Wow. When you say the share of renter households that were severely rent-burdened, spending 50% or more of monthly income on rent, increased by 42% between 2001 and 2015 to 17%, increasing rent burdens were driven in part by year-over-year growth in gross rent, contract price, plus utilities that far exceeded changes in pre-tax income, which means that after paying rent, many Americans have less money available for other needs than they did 20 years ago. That's the bottom line, isn't it?
That is the bottom line. And the other really important key takeaway from this research is that different families are affected by rent burden at different rates. Our data show that being rent burdened disproportionately affects older Americans and people of color.
Mm-hmm.
And that may be something that can surprise your listeners because, you know, it's not necessarily what people would think, that it's just millennials who may be choosing high-cost cities or trying to, there may be broader demographic shifts where they're not interested in being homeowners. In fact, the current spike in renting is propelled by people age 55 and older.
Right. Well, as you say, even the seniors are greatly affected. So the demographics, as you break them down, are quite severe and very telling here.
They really are. I mean, just another data point that is so powerful is that 46% of African-American-led renter households were rent burdened in 2015, compared with a third of white households. And just between 2001 and 2015, the gap between the share of white and African-American households that were experiencing severe rent burden, so paying more than 50% of their income toward rent, that gap grew by 66%.
Well, you know, Aaron, we talk about living the American dream. What is the opportunity for those that are rent burdened to end up purchasing a home? I got to imagine they're very limited, are they not?
Well, right. And, you know, there's lots of really good data that show how important home ownership can be to building wealth, especially wealth that can be passed on intergenerationally, as well as creating housing stability. That's not to say that home ownership is the perfect solution for all families or that it's what everyone is driving toward. But still, this research shows that between 2001 and 2015, the proportion of all Americans transitioning from renting to owning has declined pretty substantially. And the proportion of rent-burdened households transitioning to home ownership has also been on the decline.
Exactly.
So something has happened for all Americans in terms of a demographic shift, but certainly for rent-burdened households as well, where they're just not able to escape from that rent burden as easily as they used to.
Mm-hmm. Well, Aaron, as you say, Pew's report notes that policymakers focused on economic opportunity and financial well-being should consider ways to make renting more affordable for about 17 million American families who pay more than 30% of their income for the housing. That would be a clear objective of this report, would it not?
Absolutely. You know, all of our research is meant to inform policymakers and the public as we think about the health and status of the American dream and as we think about how families are living and thriving day to day in terms of their financial security. We want policymakers to really take a big step back and to think holistically about the way in which income, expenses, debt and savings all interact, that households' lives are integrated across these different streams of their balance sheet. And so our policy and program solutions need to also recognize that. You know, this is certainly a report about rent burden and the implications of rent burden, but if we're doing our job well, we're also helping to inform all of the pieces of a family's balance sheet that contribute to financial security or financial vulnerability.
You know, without a doubt. Aaron Currier, Director of Pew's Family Financial Security and Mobility Project on Bill Martinez Live. Aaron, this is some great information. Thank you so much for sharing it with us. Appreciate it.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me.
This report is brought to you by General Mills. Today, 842 million, nearly 12% of the world's population, struggle with hunger, including 13 million kids and teens in America. There's a clear need to find solutions to feed more people today and for generations to come. In response, General Mills launched the General Mills Feeding Better Future Scholars Program, which asks young people to share their sustainable agriculture and hunger relief solutions for a chance to win $50,000. Now, General Mills is thrilled to announce this year's finalists. Grain and Mannery launched Braised Brown Bags to deliver nutritious food and water to thousands of people in need. Jack Griffin created the Food Finder app to help families connect with free food assistance. Kate Ingerlin used regenerative agriculture to improve the quality of soil in her community. Katie Stagliano founded Katie's Crops to empower kids across the country to grow fresh produce to fight hunger locally. Joya Joaquim leveraged unused space, a landfill, to grow healthy produce. Vote for your favorite finalists at feedingbetterfutures.com.
Thousands of people contact InventHelp monthly about their invention or new product. Do you think companies would be interested in your idea? Do you want to try to get a patent? Call InventHelp now. Best of all, the call and information are free. InventHelp keeps your idea confidential, explaining every step of the invention process. We create professional materials and submit them to companies who are looking for new ideas in your category. We have more than 9,000 companies who have agreed to review new ideas in confidence. If a company shows interest in manufacturing your invention, we can negotiate on your behalf. We have helped over 10,000 clients receive patents. We offer 3D modeling and animation, prototyping services, and we use state-of-the-art technology to present client ideas to additional companies. Join people just like you who made the call to InventHelp. You have nothing to lose. The call and the information are free. Call now.
800-264-3150. 800-264-3150. 800-264-3150. That's 800-264-3150.
Fellow Patriots, my name is Todd Savage, founder of BlackRifleRealEstate.com. Like you, I was a prisoner of the alt-left sanctuary state until one day I chose to lead my family to freedom. Today we live on a sustainable 20-acre homestead where we shoot, hunt, garden, and homeschool our children without the tyranny of the nanny state looking over us. If you're ready to flee the city to the freedom of Idaho or Montana, our Black Rifle Real Estate team is here to help. Go to BlackRifleRealEstate.com. That's BlackRifleRealEstate.com.
Warning, if you're drowning in debt you can't afford, do not let the credit card companies trick you into thinking that you have to pay it all back, because you don't. What the credit card companies don't want you to know is that there's actually a way to get debt-free without paying off your entire debt or going bankrupt. If you have $5,000 or more in credit card debt, you now have the right to let us settle that debt for a fraction of what you owe. For free information, call Credit Associates now. 1-800-959-5759. We'll even show you how much money you could save. If you can't afford to pay off all your debt, do not let the credit card companies trick you into thinking that you have to. Call Credit Associates now for free information on how to get debt-free faster than you ever thought possible without debt consolidation or bankruptcy. We depend on your success and offer a guarantee, so there's no risk. For free information, call now. 1-800-959-5759. That's 1-800-959-5759. 1-800-959-5759.
This is Dan Pilla. Do you owe the IRS money you can't pay? Are tax debts crippling you? I've defended people from the IRS for over 30 years. I've helped thousands, and I can help you too. I wrote the book on IRS settlement, and I'm telling you, there's no such thing as a hopeless case. Call 800-34-NO-TAX to finally get free of IRS debt. With the IRS's new programs, there's never been a better time to solve your problem. Call 800-34-NO-TAX. That's 800-34-NO-TAX or my website, danpilla.com.
Getting America back on track. Bill Martinez live.
Welcome back, America. 14 minutes before the top of the hour. Bill Martinez here. And I'll tell you, George Barnes is back with us. And every time he's with us, it never ceases to amaze me, the research results that he presents. And all I can say is put on your seatbelts, get ready for this, because it turns out that Barack Obama was not the only one who wanted to fundamentally transform American society. A new survey by the American Culture and Faith Institute shows that a large majority of the nation's adults have radically redefined moral behavior related to family matters. And here to tell us more is the Executive Director of American Culture and Faith, the one and only George Barnett. George, how you doing, buddy?
I'm doing pretty good, and you?
Hey, I'm doing great until I read this survey. This is incredibly shocking.
Yeah, I mean, it's really kind of depressing when you put this all in perspective. And when you think about how critically important these matters that we're looking at are here. This was a survey about people's reactions to different family-related behaviors and whether or not they think they're morally acceptable, morally unacceptable, or not even a moral issue, just a matter of personal preference. And what the survey showed was really pretty disappointing if you're a Christian.
Yeah, we're not even lukewarm anymore. I mean, you know, like the Church of Laodicea. And I got to tell you, I just spent last week a couple of days at Focus on the Family, where they've been fighting against the war on family for decades now. And when they hear this report, they're going to be disturbed, but all the more convinced that the war, number one, continues, and number two, they need to intensify the pushback.
Well, I think that's absolutely true. You know, to me, one of the things that a survey like this does is it makes me want to get together with my friends. We put our hands on each other's shoulders and just start shaking each other.
Exactly.
And say, come on, are we really awake? Do we really understand what's going on? Are we thinking? Because if we are, we have to recognize this is like the biggest red flag that could be put in front of us, and we've got to do something about it.
Well, you know, let's see. You know, we talk about born-agains. They differ on 6 of 8 moral behaviors. Explain to our audience what we're looking at here, George.
Yeah, essentially what we were trying to do is figure out what do people think is morally acceptable behavior. Mm-hmm. And so we gave them 8 different behaviors that are kind of related to how families operate, what families become. And what we found was that on a large share of these, for instance, getting a divorce, 77% of Americans, 3 out of 4 Americans, mm-hmm. say that getting a divorce is either morally acceptable or it's not even a moral issue, mm-hmm. just a matter of personal preference. sexual intercourse between an unmarried male and female adult. 71% say it's acceptable or not even a moral issue. Having a baby without the parents, the people who conceive the child, being married, 69% say that's acceptable. Intentionally looking at pictures or videos that display nudity or explicit sexual behavior, that is, intentionally looking at pornography, almost 6 out of 10, 58% say that's morally acceptable or not even a moral issue. And so you go on down the list, you know, 48% say having an abortion is acceptable. Almost 3 out of 10 say that, you know, polygamy is morally acceptable. This is essentially rewriting the rules of morality and saying that whatever the Bible taught is irrelevant. We're not paying any attention to it, and we're certainly not obeying it. And then when we looked at born-again Christians, we found that, well, praise the Lord, there are some discernible differences on many of these factors. An average of 22 percentage points of difference across 7 of these 8 behaviors. Mm-hmm. However, having said that, we also found that a large majority of Christians support a number of these things, like 66% of born-again Christians say getting a divorce is morally acceptable. Mm-hmm. 54% say having a baby without the parents being married, morally acceptable. 51% sexual intercourse between unmarried adults, morally acceptable. And even 38% saying that intentionally viewing pornography is morally acceptable. So we've got problems in our own family as well.
You know, George, looking at these questions and the numbers that come up, the first thing that comes to mind is, are these numbers low? Because how honest do these people really want to be about talking about these moral issues, especially born-again Christians? Because I've heard the number of pornography, the impact of pornography, for example, in the pews of today's churches, much higher than the number that we're indicating here. And so I don't know. I mean, if regardless, the numbers are shocking. But even at that, you think, wow, if these are low, because sometimes people really don't want to give you, you know, a true answer because you may be putting them on the spot with some of these questions.
Well, that's absolutely true. And, you know, with that in mind, one of the things that we're finding is that as these numbers get larger and larger for these kinds of behaviors, what's happening is that American society is accepting these behaviors as the new norm.
Yes.
The new normal. And so we're also therefore finding that more and more people feel free to come out and say, well, yeah, I do that. You know, with regard to born-again Christians, the difference there may be that there are a number of Christians who engage in some of these behaviors that the Bible would suggest are immoral. They know they're immoral, but they do them anyway. So there's that distinction as well, whether or not it's morally acceptable and whether or not they do it. We didn't ask whether they were doing these things.
Mm-hmm. Right, exactly.
Even higher.
Yeah, George, this is really scary stuff, and it's no wonder that our families are taking the brunt of this, our children. I mean, what is this doing to the next generation?
Well, it's interesting. When you look at the data by generation, what you see is significant movement on many of these things. And so, in particular, if we were to look at things like polygamy, you know, being married to more than one person at a time, what we find is that among people who are 65 or older, it's only 13% say that's morally acceptable. Boomers, 21%. But then you look at the two younger generations, those who are in their 20s, 30s, and 40s, and we're up close to 40% saying that polygamy is okay. So, again, there's real growth across generations there. You look at things like pornography. And we noted that maybe these kind of figures are depressed a little bit, but among boomers and elders, you had roughly half who said looking at pornography is morally acceptable. But among the two younger generations, it's close to two-thirds.
Wow.
So, you know, the line keeps getting pushed farther and farther away from where God put that line in the sand.
George, this is pretty scary stuff. I mean, what do we do? I mean, the first instinct is yes, pray. But it's like, you know, where is the countervailing voice that comes out to say, you know, something's got to stop here. I mean, this is not, the Bible is real clear on these issues. The fact that we're missing this mark, I mean, you've been going back for decades and talking about a biblical worldview and really following through, especially with born-agains, on what the Bible said. God really did say it, even though the culture would want to question it. But, boy, are we missing the mark here. I mean, this is really, really dangerous.
Yeah, it certainly is. I mean, we're certainly in the danger zone. The needle's up in the red part of the meter. And so I think we've got to recognize, you know what, this is a war. It's been going on now for 50 and 60 years. Mm-hmm. Some people still don't even recognize it as being a war. We've got to wake up. We've got to realize that to win that war, we've got to enlist. You know, mm-hmm. I mean, we've got to get in the game.
Yes.
And so things need to change with us. You know, point number one, do a personal moral inventory. You know, compare what you believe to what the Bible teaches. Figure out where you may be missing the mark. Also, don't just look at what you believe. Look at your behavior.
Yes, exactly.
You know, where are you showing what you believe by what you do? As adults, you know, if we have children, recognize that the war is won or lost in the minds and the hearts of children. Because by the age of 13 is where our worldviews are determined, our moral precepts are in place. So we've really got to get onto this with young people. Churches need to be supporting families in this, giving parents the tools to do it. It's not the church's job to raise our kids. It's our job as the parents to do it, and we can do a better job of it. But part of that also has to do with their media diet. It also has to do with the laws, the people that we put into government,
exactly.
Who put laws into place that allow bad things to happen. So there's a lot that we can do, but we've got to be committed to doing it.
Are we not connecting the consequences of violating God's laws here, George? Obviously we're not.
Obviously we're not. And I think part of that goes back to some of the basic measures that we take a look at every month. You know, where we're looking at, are people even bothering to read the Bible?
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're not going to know what's in it if you're not spending time in it. We know that fewer and fewer Americans, fewer and fewer Christians are spending time reading the Bible. Fewer of them are involved in not just reading it, but studying it. Fewer of them are involved in any kind of a discipling relationship. That's an intense one, not just a, hey, let's get together for a small group Wednesday night and, you know, we'll have chips and dip and, you know, talk a little bit about the Lord. I mean, something that's really intense, as if we took this stuff seriously, as if
yes.
It really mattered, as if God truly cares and understands about what's going in our life. We're not taking it that seriously. We can do so much better.
Well, George, all I want to say is to the senior pastors, to Bible study leaders, to hustle. To this survey. Go to your website. Go to George's website. Download it. Talk about it in your small group. Talk about it with people in your inner circle to advise them and to make them aware of just how serious this problem is. George, tell them where they can go for more information.
Yeah, they can go to culturefaith.com, which will have the study there. GeorgeBarna.com will have the study there. We really want people to take this and spend time thinking and praying about it and then doing something about it. Because it's not just enough to know that we have a problem. We've got to solve this problem.
A transformation needs to take place, and this will go a long way in helping us realize how far we're missing the mark if we choose to be honest with ourselves and come to the face of God with humility and seek His truth and ask for His forgiveness. George Barna, Executive Director of the American Culture and Faith Institute. George, as always, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you. Good to be with you.
Have you checked your Google search results lately? Search results are usually the first impression that people form of you or your business. So make sure that they create a positive impression with ReputationDefender.com. What the internet says about you can have a big impact on your life and your livelihood, even if it's not true. Fortunately, you can now control how you look online and in online search results with ReputationDefender.com. Call 800-831-0771 now. That's 800-831-0771 for your free reputation. rehabilitation analysis. If you have negative material from an ex-employee, upset patient, or former client, newspaper article, legal issue, social media, or other source showing up in your search results, you can combat it with ReputationDefender.com. Our dedicated experts in patented technology can help make your online search results look their best. Call 800-831-0771 to learn more. 800-831-0771. That's 800-831-0771. Or visit ReputationDefender.com.
Bacon lovers, we ship free. Try our amazing bacon. No refrigeration required. Proprietary value-added packaging provides 10-year shelf life and protects the leanest, thickest, center-cut, fully cooked bacon in America today.